Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International for Monday, the 26th of May, 2025. It is program number 1378 of the lunchroom, and I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, of course, in addition to 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website, rcistlucia.com, and we are also streaming live on Facebook. And you just have to search for us on the official page of Radio Caribbean International. Now, if you want to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, this Monday, you can just call in to 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And you can also reach us on our WhatsApp number. That is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. I look back in time for today, and we go back to the 1896. The Dow Jones Industrial Average began with an average of 12 industrial stocks. The daily closing value was 40.9. In the year 1908, on this day, at Masjid Soliman in southwest Persia, the first major commercial oil strike in the Middle East was made, and those rights were acquired by the United Kingdom. And of course, a lot of that was to fuel the rising demand in vehicles and cars. And in 1927, Henry Ford and the Ford Motor Company produced the last and 15th millionth Model T Ford. In 1948, on this day, South Africa elected a national government under D.F. Malan with an apartheid policy. And in 2004, on this day, U.S. Army veteran Terry Nichols was found guilty of 161 state murder charges for helping carry out the Oklahoma City bombing. We now move on to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought to the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also glad gas, and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to our program for today. And we do hope that you are enjoying it and having a good one. Now, for our dish of the day, we want to pay a homage to an individual who was a regular guest right here at the lunchroom on very many occasions. Sometimes he would, in fact, just pop in to say hello. And of course, we certainly valued his contributions immensely, particularly, of course, in the matter of geopolitics, international relations. And, of course, I speak of Mr. Dennis Springer. Now, fortunately, we gotten news of his passing yesterday morning, and certainly he will be missed by many individuals around St. Lucia. Of course, he was a very well-known figure, and that in large measure was part to the fact that he was a political commentator. He spoke quite a bit to the social and political occurrences in the contemporary setting of St. Lucia. Of course, he was the host of a number of programs. He made contributions perhaps on nearly every single production or station broadcast that exists on island. And of course, most recently, he was running a program on Calabash TV. But, of course, had also made a long-standing contribution to DBS's commentary segment. He had been on Choice as well. And, of course, he very often had something to say, and it was very rare that he did not. And he, of course, was very vocal on the matter of politics and giving his opinion and his analysis of what was there. Of course, he was also, we should mention, a significant writer. And he wrote quite a bit, published quite a bit. He was also very passionate, of course, about other matters which we don't often think of him within that light, but that of environment, for example. And he, in fact, had published a children's book about the environment. He also was very instrumental in a publication on the birds of St. Lucia. And of course, he was also an academic. In fact, he was a lecturer at the University of the West Indies, at Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, and he did spend quite a bit of time within the sphere that he taught, of course, political science. He was also very passionate on the geopolitics of the world, but in particular about St. Lucia and its political diplomatic stance, especially when it came to that of the Republic of China, Taiwan. And I think it would be fair to say that it would be very hard-pressed to find a St. Lucian who was so passionate about Taiwan as a country, as a people, and as its right to exist as a democracy. And in fact, perhaps if he had his way, he would certainly want it to be an independent democratic entity in its very own right. And he certainly championed that considerably and built very strong relationships with Taiwan. And I remember him actually mentioning that the first time that he had actually visited Taiwan, I believe, was back when he was in fact serving within the British Army and had been based in Singapore. And of course, was at that time, Singapore was a colony, a British colony. And he, in fact, did mention that he and a cousin of ours, Mr. Desmond George, who had also, at that time he was serving in the military, but in the U.S. Army, I think he was in Taiwan at the time, and he visited him in Taiwan. And so a very, very long-standing appreciation for Asia, for the Pacific region, and in particular for Taiwan. And of course, he in fact spent time in Taiwan, studying there, living there. He was, I think, part of the Academica Sinica, and certainly one could say fell in love with that country, and was a very ardent supporter, a proponent of Taiwan. He, in fact, as I said, grew many friendships, and many of those friendships were with individuals who eventually even became major players in Taiwanese politics, even former President Tsai Ing-wen, for example. So he certainly could be seen as perhaps a de facto, he could be seen as a de facto ambassador and representative for St. Lucia to Taiwan, in terms of his relations, the passion of that he had for that country. And of course, he very often shared those views right here on this program and on many other programs, as he, of course, was very willing to share it with and many, many positions that he held, as he was quite a regular individual moving all about St. Lucia. And in particular, of course, one might think that he would have perhaps almost have been living in the locus of Massey Mega, quite often seen there. And I think it was perhaps because he was perhaps heading across to meet his children at school. And so certainly he might would often have stopped there. And many people have commented about his conversations, his car park conversations over in that area. But in fact, it was perhaps everywhere where he went. He certainly made a point of dialogue and discourse. And so certainly St. Lucia has lost a son of the soil who made a meaningful, very, very meaningful contribution in terms of enlightening, in terms of public dialogue, in terms of raising our awareness of many of the issues which sometimes we do not think are actually impacting us, but certainly do have their consequences. And of course, an individual who imparted this knowledge, both in an academic setting and in a very informal setting as well. Certainly an individual who was a strong proponent of lifelong learning and certainly was a very, very loving individual. And so certainly we want to extend our condolences to his wife and, of course, his children. And some of them, in fact, are still very young. And we definitely want to extend to his extended family, of course, Cletus and his nephews. And, of course, he is predeceased by other members of his family, other siblings, who, of course, most recently, we can remember Mr. Winston Springer, who was his brother. And so certainly we want to share our condolences, commiserations with him and all those who certainly were his friends and his relatives at this time. So, Dennis, thank you very much for what you have done, what you did for St. Lucia and for its development and the contribution that we made. And, of course, we quite often perhaps don't get that opportunity to show our appreciation sufficiently to individuals who very much, very freely give of their own selves and time again. Unfortunately, we're seeing the loss of so many of these individuals over time. So the call, of course, to remember individuals as they are alive, and of course the importance of records, of writing, of taking it up, because quite often we have within our own sphere our very own story, and sometimes we have the stories of other individuals who are not known to many, but certainly themselves made significant contributions, and the responsibility to speak of them and write of them is very, very impactful. And let's remember, we have the religion that is, in fact, two of the most important religions in the world right now. One being that of Christianity, and the leading figure within Christianity, Jesus Christ, never wrote. We don't have anything written by him, right? There's this one scripture which has always caused quite a lot of intrigue, where, you know, individuals are looking to pelt stones at an individual, a lady who they seem to have thought was unclean and didn't want her to survive. And of course, then he sat in the ground. He sat and he wrote in the ground. And that's all that we know that he wrote, right? But yet still, many, many, in fact, have written about him and what he did and gave their own perspectives and shared that story. And as a result of that, we see the birth of a religion, the start of a religion, and which still persists 2,000 years on. So it is really important that we remember individuals and that we do put pen to paper and remember their contributions as well. It is very, very, very important. And of course, within that context, it's also why we need to ensure that we have institutions through which those things can be done. And we can, of course, always almost immediately think about the archives, the St. Lucia National Archives, as being important for the record and the preservation of material that is sometimes is dated, and it is, but yet still has lots of information about the past. But of course, the institutions that we also have to think about include the media, and we should also even say even the print media. Right now, I think we're at a point where we have only one newspaper publishing right now in St. Lucia. And when you think about it, I mean, as a society, we certainly have lots and lots of TV stations. We've got lots of radio stations, and we even have some online offerings as well. And those are very important, of course, because the reality is the medium by which people share and transmit information has changed considerably. But when we think back, and I mean, the Voice of St. Lucia was first published back in 1885. That's 140 years ago this year. And we're still at this point where we're pretty much dependent on this one newspaper to be able to reflect the happenings of, and to record it in written form, the happenings of the time. And that's something that we've got to be mindful of, because newspapers are very, very important in terms of keeping these, keeping that very current information, keeping it in paper form, in record form for the future. And that's really, really important. So in fact, in some societies, they have actually gone the direction of even subsidizing their newspapers, their publications. And of course, it's important where you have very small societies where you've got a national language, and they want to promote the national language. And so therefore, that's why they take the decision to actually fund or finance various publications. And sometimes these publications, they're being funded, financed by government, but they're expected to be independent, right? They're expected to be able to say what is going on regardless. And one country that comes to mind that does that is Finland. And so it's something to think about when we're thinking about the importance of records and ensuring that we have things to be kept for the future. It is definitely one of those major concerns. Of course, as I mentioned, much of what we are dependent on in today's world is electronic, and we're talking about data that is really down to bits and bytes, and how that is conserved has a lot to do with the creation of cloud systems. And these things, at the end of the day, really come down to physical storage in data centers. And we have to also think about that as a country, too, when it comes to our memory of ourselves. Do we have the means to be able to conserve that information for the long term, into the future? And many of these forms of records, sometimes they can be pretty fragile, right? And they're dependent, of course, on maintaining a lot of different systems and ensuring that these things are actually protected. So we've seen, unfortunately, that we don't do a very good job of it in very many instances. And we can think back to Radio St. Lucia and the unfortunate situation that has befallen their own archives over there. And we can also think to the matter of the Folk Research Center, which was destroyed by fire back in March the 25th of 2018. And realize that, hey, we do need to ensure that we have our own record systems in place. And part of that is also to ensure that it's not only here in St. Lucia, but it's also something that is can be available beyond as well. And because sometimes and quite often we find ourselves in this situation where the records don't exist on island, but they exist in the archives, in the various universities and libraries, and collections, personal collections, private collections as well, of people on the outside. So it is certainly something to be mindful of within this context of memory. And so certainly as we remember Dennis, we also hope that we can also ensure that we have some memories of beyond him and others who have also made meaningful contributions to our national development. That's our dish of the day. When we come back, we're going to take in our weather report and then come back in and head to the phone lines.
This has been The Daily Dish.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got glass, soy, and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, Jules Grosilis, and Clark Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939.
Island style. We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island style. Whoa. We got the time that will make you happy. Island style. Oh, yeah. We make your dream come alive in Island style.
We have tiles and tin sets, pieces and ground. Need this on the house out for the best price and the latest style. Take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, quality, yeah. Price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
And of course, on the 1.4, it's now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, winds will be blowing from the east in near 23 miles per hour or 37 kilometers per hour. The weather is generally cloudy and hazy with a few scattered showers. There is an advisory in air which raises persons with respiratory ailments and dust allergies are advised to take the necessary precautions due to reduced air quality. Also, small craft operators and sea bathers are advised to exercise caution due to brisk winds and locally rough seas and reduced visibility. The forecast for Little Sandy is partly cloudy and hazy, becoming cloudy at times with some scattered showers. And the weather summary, the Atlantic high pressure system will continue to generate moderate to brisk easterly winds and locally rough seas across the Eastern Caribbean region during the next few days. Patches of low-level clouds drifting along the wind flow and enhanced by favorable upper-level support will cause some showers over the Lesser Antilles during the next 24 hours. Also, a plume of Sahara and dust haze will continue to reduce visibility and air quality across the Eastern Caribbean region during the next 24 to 36 hours. Also, a tropical wave located over the eastern tropical Atlantic is moving westward at near 15 miles per hour or 24 kilometers per hour.
This has been RCI's Weather News. For more information, call the Weather Hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Star.
kitchen set, spaces and grout. Everything you need to sort the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say, quality, price, service, choice. It's all an Island Style.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarosa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Beaufort Highway. So call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Thailand Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to our program here at the Lunchroom. Excuse me, at Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Now, of course, if you want to call in to tell us what's on your plate today, the number to do so is 452-3046. Again, 452-3046. And we also have the option of calling in via WhatsApp. That is 724-0008. Again, 724-0008. It's actually Independence Day in the Cooperative Republic of Guyana. And we want to extend our best wishes to all individuals of Guyanese citizenship and Guyanese descent at this time. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchroom. And what's
Hi,
on your plate
good
today?
Afternoon.
How are you doing, caller?
I'm good.
Good, good.
First of all, as you said, I heard the different accent of Mr. Dennis Springer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What I call the St. Lucian Taiwanese.
What you call him a St. Lucian Taiwanese?
Yes, the St. Lucian Taiwanese, because I know he has everything Taiwan.
Yes. Yes, and definitely. He was very, very passionate.
Very, very passionate.
When it came to, care
and
for Taiwan.
And he had this whole thing saying after he had a program on DBS. And when he said, he would say, like, good night, good night, good night.
he would also give blessings as well. I do recall that he would always extend
blessings.
Well,
he used to come to the local church. When my site was there, he used to always come on a Sunday morning. So, mm-hmm. And I know his wife, Yulan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I know it's a hard time for them. It's so many, with the children, especially the young one.
Yes. Yes.
I think the last time he was on your show, he said the youngest was 9. Can you remember?
He has a son, I think. His son is about that,
the
I
son,
think.
He
yes.
said so.
And I think his daughter is now in high school.
First one.
Yeah.
In university.
I'm not sure.
There was a debate. First of all, I want to say I did not know the Commissioner of Police Bringard was a rapper.
He did share some of an extempo piece at the opening of the former custody suites. Now I think it's called the Centralized Community Safety Center. Very.
I think he was very enthusiastic. Just you could have felt it the way he saw how he was so happy about it. But I listened to it. There was a debate this morning. Like people were calling and saying that it's a jail. And I think the...
Sorry, it's
host,
not a what?
It is a jail. And the talk show was so interesting that is under. It is a holding cell for people. I mean, you don't keep them there for long. It's just that the accuser, you pick them up for something wrong they're doing. But you want to just keep contain them until you know they're ready. So the people that are fear about them will say that it is, at the end of the day, as far as the community is a jail. Where he was trying to tell them, there's a holding cell and the prison, and the prison is where you are put after you have been sentenced and things. But although when I was I did my research, prison is also, you can also be in prison awaiting trial.
Yes, you can be. You're on remand.
So
this is normally for... an individual who may have been arrested by the police, but has not yet been charged, the person has not, so because you're not charged yet, then you would then, you remember the police usually has about, 72 hours within which
to
hold individuals. So
to me, in the holding cell, after 70 hours, if you have not been bailed or if they just, then they send you to a body laid. So me, that's why he was trying to explain to them. That's why he said it's not a jail. It's a holding cell until, because to me, most people are in the holding cell of Marshall and those places, once no, they have not gotten bail, what did they send them all the way to body rate until the case or whatever it's called?
So, so most police officers will have holding cells, right?
Yes.
And so that would be, I mean, Marsha would have, all of them would have Rosalie, Babono.
Yes,
well, we don't really have a full-fledged police station operator at Rosalie right now. But in the case of the city, which is, of course, the highest concentration of population.
Yes.
And also where you have your courts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So remember, because people have to be brought to court sometimes before a magistrate for that first hearing, that initial mm-hmm. hearing. And so you needed a facility, which is
yes.
what custody suites would have done generally.
Yes.
It served that purpose of providing these holding cells
yes.
For individuals who were within that 3-day window
yes, yes.
before being sent to Bodley for the purpose of remand.
And I would say, especially at carnival time, when you have some people really, really getting on the police, have to pick them up, hold them. Where do you put them?
It could be carnival time, but it could be so many different things. It could be a serious emergency.
And you need to put some.
You may have a riot. You may have a lot of different things where you've got to hold people, and the expectation is that
you need somewhere to quickly hold people for a certain amount of time. So I don't find that argument. Now, even what's her name? Nancy Charles had a problem with that on Thursday. She's getting on so much about it. Oh, it's just whatever. They're making such a fuss about it where they intended to have that Hall of Justice and all those kind of things she was talking about. The plans was already there to do the Hall of Justice and the new whole police station and all of that.
Right. So then the big question is, what happens in between? Right.
Nothing.
Exactly. And that's where the challenge is. It's a basic yes. element of planning.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to execute a project, you therefore have to make, at the very least, if your argument is, well, these facilities would have been a part of maybe the new police headquarters project,
yes.
right? If that was the
yes.
argument, which is a fair argument, okay, I don't know if it is or not, but you would have then had to have made some measures, you had to have done something in the interim to be able to deal with the capacity of the police to handle such matters.
But there was
and there was nothing. You know, that's like saying, well, you know, remember about the whole situation of the Soufre Bridge, right? You just don't go and demolish a working operable bridge without first ensuring that the traffic that has to utilize that very same bridge has an alternative. Right, has a reasonable alternative to be able to, traverse wherever you need to go. And it's the same principle in all of these things. You don't demolish something without making any kind of interim or temporary arrangements to facilitate the services that the thing that you're demolishing actually provides.
The police were at loss. They had nowhere to place it. And they also talk about this tunnel, I think, that was going to be in that same spot under the bridge. So a gentleman was...
I don't know about what is that about a tunnel?
Some tunnel to that same place. I think you see this big river close to where the former jail was and prisons. I think they were also talking about having something like underground, like some tunnel. And all these kind of things, where things would be able to go underground and pass underground.
I'm not sure about that at all, caller.
A gentleman called today and he said he find that was not feasible. And yet somebody else called and said, oh, but one was built in England. You have an underground tunnel from under sea tunnel.
The principle of having tunnels,
France.
You have tunnels under rivers and harbors and things all the time. But I what I'm not sure of is in terms of this specific instance, what was the context of the tunnel being built for?
I don't know if you heard when the Prime Minister said they were going to have some underground prison. So I think it's maybe something like that was the intention. So it's maybe there's going to have this long tunnel that would take you under this place. To, you know, instead of having to traverse the road, you have this underground tunnel.
Okay, so what happens in the case of courthouses or halls of justice, whatever you want to call them, you also do need holding cells, right? And this is for the purpose of the prisoners being brought in to, for court, for the criminal courts. So you will normally have at the ground level or basement level of that building, you will normally have holding cells. Right, so I'm not sure if that is the where this whole tunnel thing came from, in terms of a reference to a tunnel. I don't know. For example, if the new halls of justice that's being proposed.
That's what the chief said, but then at the end of the day, if you have all of those, you have all of those things to do, the hall of justice and all of those things. But then at the end of the day, if you listen carefully, I don't know if you ever listen, because just like the hospital. When different people came and give a different price, I remember somebody saying 180, who saying 190, who saying each a minister, even the prime minister, give a different price of what that it would cost them to build a hospital. And it's just like the Hall of Justice. In May 23rd, 2021, when the prime minister was asked, when are you going to build the justice? When is the commandment? Where are you going to get the money? All of this thing. He said, I think it's about November. And he said, I am going to try to get $99 million from the NIC. That was his. And then when Nancy Charles was on her program, and she was giving a lot of, I think, talking about the Hall of Justice, Mr. John Peters had to call and clarify, because a lot of what she was saying was untrue, and he needed his time to state things as it was. And then she said they had $88 million for the Hall of Justice. Now, her prime minister said 99. She said 88. And in New York, Hermingel Francis said that all by now the thing, because they had $50 million for the Hall of Justice. So how three people from the same party each are given a different price range? What was, you know, is, as I said, just like the hospital, how can everybody come out with the same thing? Because if everything, you have everything down to a T, it should be known that this is what it was going to cost. But to me, everybody has given a different price, just like the hospital. So which means you all had nothing in place. Yeah, but it's just a guessing game of what you all think is going to cost.
It may be that, but it could also be that the project scope may have been changing over time. So maybe the initial amount might have been $50 million. I think from what I recall, I remember somewhere around $67 million or something like that, or $70 million, somewhere in that region. The original proposal that they were working with, which was at the Bridge Street site. But it was, now the thing about it is that you're calling it a Halls of Justice, but it's not, it wasn't really a Halls of Justice. And I do think that the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister himself, Mr. Chastney, indicated that this project was actually a police headquarters with some courts, right? Now that's what it was, right? With six courts. It wasn't a true Halls of Justice, no.
Because knowing that former prime minister, now, everything is that, grand.
Right. So in the case of the courts, he didn't want anything grand. He just wanted to slap on some courts wherever he could, right? Because remember, Colum, this thing has a lot of history to it. Originally, there was a proposal which had come out under the King administration, and there was a group called the Primus Corporation, right?
Yes.
And those individuals had come forward to that administration at that time, and it was proposing to construct a new police headquarters, right, in the existing site of the police headquarters. And that project did not happen, right? I wasn't privy to exactly why it did not happen, but it appears, of course, in terms of financing, because in that instance, the idea was that it was a sort of like a build, own, lease, transfer type thing. So whoever was coming forward, the company was expected to to finance the project, right?
Yeah.
That did not happen during that period of time. So later on, when you then had the Alan Chastney administration, remember there was, even before that, there was a proposal that had been done for the construction of a new House of Justice. And that was a very broad program, which through the the Eastern Caribbean Supreme Court, looking at all the various halls of just of the courthouses across the Eastern Caribbean, right? So it wasn't just St. Lucia. That project did not happen because, I suspect maybe they didn't want to spend the amount of money that was required, because I think it was somewhere in the region of about $130 million.
Yeah.
And at the time, that was being proposed for Barnard Hill.
There was the then. Center.
Right, remember there was. Yeah. Right, so there were some issues with the cultural center.
You then wasn't in support at all of it being there.
So the cultural people were not in support. But you see, it was the issue was more so because there was no real proposal as to, if you are planning on using that site for that purpose, what are you going to do about the cultural center?
Yes, right?
There was no plan really. In fact, I think that is when we there was this conversation about putting the using these tents. This is where the tents, remember there was a whole issue about tents?
Yes, they're putting it up now.
And FCCA ended up being in a tent at Pigeon Island. And so Mr. Chastney had a thing for tents at that time. And they were proposing to put the cultural center in a tent.
Yes.
At Shock, right?
That's it. We ended to put it at by Shock side, and the people said no.
Right, because it was not an actual, because remember, what was there right now, what is there right now up at Barnard Hill is effectively kind of like the same tent concept, right? Which was a gift by the French government. It was supposed to have been just a temporary facility built back in the early 1980s. For that purpose. It's still, and we still have it to today, up to today, right?
Yeah. So I don't remember if you remember there's a proposal by the Taiwanese to build a state-of-the-art culture.
Right. So I was coming to that.
That was scrapped off when you came in.
So I was coming to that next, right? So under the Kenny Anthony administration, there was then a feasibility study that had been done in conjunction with some Taiwanese architects, actually the people were actually based in Miami, all right? So they were, but the gentleman who owned the architectural firm who was doing it was a Taiwanese-born architect.
Yeah.
And the proposal was to develop the same area that is now, where they started doing the Fresh Start Housing Project, right? Shock Gardens. The idea was to utilize an elevated area immediately south of the Caribbean cinemas, right?
Yes.
To develop this new cultural center, National Cultural Center, which had a 1,500 seat theater and training rooms and reception hall and art gallery. And there was also a space for an amphitheater, right? An outdoor amphitheater. So if you wanted to have larger shows, you know, your jazz shows, you could have actually developed it there, right?
Yes.
So that was the idea at that point. So this is like around 2015. And at the same time, another Kenny Anthony government, they were looking at developing the new halls of justice in the vicinity.
Along the Millennium Highway.
Right. So it would be on the, if when you're heading south towards Cul-de-Sac, it would have been on the right-hand side, opposite from where where that roundabout is that you use to access the hospital.
Yeah.
So on the other side, that was where they were.
There's a lot of space there.
Right. Exactly. So there's a lot of land there. You know, very extensive amount of land for development of a hospital.
Talking about Millennium, have you driven there? It's completed almost.
I was up on that side on Saturday, and it's just a small section down at the bottom.
Yes, it's like carpet.
Yes. I know. A great relief to many drivers.
Now it's the cul-de-sac.
No, the cul-de-sac side is done already as well. The cul-de-sac side.
How do you call them? The people doing the West Coast.
Oh, Namalco. You talk about the company.
Namalco, I find is each time they play, you know, push their side. So because I've been traveling that road, back and forth, going by my sister, and up Thursday, you know, to travel that road there. So I think it's, I find there's a lot of progress. It's good to know. But although just, I think, Monday morning, because of the road there, they were completing. My brother's car was stuck. You know, he lived the first tunnel going down south from the hospital. His car, because they were doing work, and they were even doing some paving for him so that he could drive his vehicle in. And while his vehicle was parked at the side because of the work they were completing, a bus ran right into his car around 6 in the morning, mashed up the whole back of his car.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yes, but I'm happy at least all this work has been done, and it's a lot better too.
So that is ongoing right now in terms of But so coming back to the halls of justice that you were talking about, right? So then when there was the Alan Chassé administration, they then began proposing this new halls of justice project, which was well, not really a Hall of Justice, sorry. It is a police headquarters.
Yes, with some holding
Six courthouses. Now the issue, but the issue there, of course, is that the Eastern Caribbean Supreme Court did not want to have, the principal courts for the island
close to the prison,
within a police station, right? Okay. Within a police facility. Yes, and that is where the issue lay, right? In terms of separating, at
police
least,
from the court.
And certainly in terms of creating a clear distinction between the courts, right? And
the
their independence from the police.
Police, okay.
So, I mean, if you could have said, if the decision was, hey, well, we are building the halls of justice in that side, and we're doing that alone.
Mm-hmm.
Then
it
I
would
think
have been approved.
It would have probably been fine for the Eastern Caribbean Supreme Court. But that was not what was being proposed.
Okay.
They wanted to do the police headquarters and the halls of justice in the same complex. Funnily enough as well, because the original plan, which as far as I can recall it, and Mr. Herman Gil-Francis was the Minister for National Security at the time, and I think he's on record speaking about it, that the original plan was really to develop La Toque as the police headquarters. Right, so where you had the former Golden Hope facility. Which, in fact, even before it was that, was a part of the whole British
police
garrison. It was part of the garrison for Castries.
Yeah.
So that whole area, inclusive of the existing La Toque facility that the police have, where they have the training school and SSU.
Yes.
So you'd have created one complex for that purpose. In fact, I still think personally that is the better route to go. Unfortunately, it seems that some police officers seem to have some apprehension with the idea of Golden Hope. And I don't know what the thinking is there, to be honest. But I think it's really a great opportunity, because you actually have a lot more space there to develop a holistic campus for the Royal St. Lucia Police Force.
Yeah,
I mean the days when go ahead, caller. Sorry.
But I heard the Prime Minister said they're going to be building a new police headquarters on the same site as where the holding cell is right now.
Yes, so it would be incorporating where the Royal Jail used to be, and incorporating that entire space.
So does that enough
space
for maybe building something vast, big enough? So.
Well, I mean, I assume they're going to go up, and I would assume that the police want to have something there. But I think the benefit of actually La Toque is that you actually have a lot of the facilities already there, and you can actually.
Yeah, but didn't Kenny Anthony also thought of doing it there also? To me, we can recall he also thought of that place also.
I don't think so, because remember during the Kenny Anthony period, the proposal was actually to develop the office of the Prime Minister in that location.
Okay.
Remember in the Golden Hope facility?
Yes.
That was what was the plan at the time,
okay,
from what I recall. But I mean, again, it it's really to look at everything holistically, because we obviously have, you know, limited land in the Castries Basin, and to see what really makes good sense overall for the development of the country.
And what about the because I heard the Prime Minister talk about the airport, the development in V4. But and he was saying that actually there was actually no plan for the they had the plan in place. They knew what they wanted to do. Everything was in plan. But as if the people that came in, they just decided, you know, they just put things together and do piece there, do piece there. Is that what these people were really doing?
You're talking about the new
the airport, the Hiwanawa Airport.
Well, that's the big problem that it still exists to today. There was a very clear strategy and plan, right, which was mapped out within a master plan that had been prepared for the Hiwanawa International Airport.
It was discarded.
And that was effectively discarded, right? Both in terms of the location of where the terminal was supposed to have been built, as well as the scale of the new terminal. In both instances, it is incongruent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what has in fact happened is that, in fact, that whole area where the terminal is now being, well, is the, where the foundation of is currently for that new terminal
building,
is not where it is supposed to be at all, right? And that area was really supposed to have been left clear for future expansion, for eventually the use of air cargo and your allied auxiliary services. That was the plan for that area, right? It is even more futuristically. I mean, you literally have the terminal being built on an old runway. That's where it's placed, you know, and it's just a very strange approach. You know, even the location of the original terminal, which we have right now in use, was very, very carefully thought through, you know. I mean, the designers at the time actually aligned it in such a way that it's right on the old axis of the road into Viewfort, right? The old carriageway from Opicor down into Clark Street, that it's right on that alignment. So in other words, it should have been visible from the town of VA4 as well as when you're approaching from the northern side. That was the thinking. The shift now is, obviously.
Would you say that if somebody, an investor, somebody like this, like you say, the PPP, how you call it, the private...
Public-private partnership,
come and said, okay, I understand you have discarded the former government own, but can you show me your master plan for what you intend to do instead of going? Would that have been there?
From them? They may have had some sort of a master plan, but as to whether it was a real master plan, that's a whole other thing. I mean, master plans have
master
to be
plan by on paper and master plan by mouth.
In developing a master plan, you're supposed to go through a particular process of analysis. It has to be based on your forecasting. You have to do those projections. You've got to design it based on what are your peak days, determining that. That's how, and to see how over your forecast period, what you need at what time, right? And that should inform that aspect of the scale, but also in terms of the overall build out of the facility. You have to be looking at a number of issues, access points. You have to be looking at the aeronautical considerations of what you require in terms of your taxiways, access to the runway, how you're going to manage your parking apron, how you're going to expand your parking apron. Your environmental considerations are also in there as well. So that's why issues like the drainage and flooding and proximity to the river, all of these things should be taken into consideration.
So if you were to ask an expert engineer, I know you're an engineer too, would they say all of these things were in place?
If all was in place?
All of what you just said, would you say with the work they started on, would you say all of these plans that they're supposed to do, were they in place so somebody could look at it and say, yes, everything was done in, right.
Not in totality, no.
Okay.
No.
So they were just
They were pretty much working on just developing the terminal, but they were not looking at a fully holistic plan.
Okay.
For the entire aerodrome.
So then what was this beautiful drawing that was on NTN almost every day?
Yeah, well, there was a beautiful drawing. They were. They spent a lot of money developing, doing architectural plans for the for a terminal building. But that's one aspect. But as to how that necessarily marries with what is within the planning context of what you need to do, that's different. So you can you can go and you can hire an architect and ask them, you know, to do this, and the architect will do what you tell them to do to a certain extent, to a very large extent.
Yes.
You know, the architect is guided by the requirements of the client.
Yes, because I think just last month I was listening on NTN, and my there's two people from Slasper. Well, my friend, Miss Amy Charles, who was an air traffic controller for the longest while, but right now is at Slasper.
Yes, that's correct.
And she was talking about it, you know, the airport and the plant she's in. And she said, she as although she knows she's going to retirement pretty soon, but what she has seen so far has given us so much hope. You know, give that something really, really good to come out good of what is. She had so much. The only thing that is the fact that she won't be there because she's going to retirement soon. And this is she has so much because she and another guy, and they were talking about all, you know, what that had to be done and what is being done right now and all sorts of things. So I was glad to hear because you heard so much. She's saying we had everything in place to be done already. This was that, and then works stopped on the airport?
Well, works were stopped on the terminal building. Yes. So what was continuing was the air traffic control tower, because remember the issue with the terminal building, as we were just talking about, caller, is that the scale of it was excessive. There were elements of it which were not necessary for the scale of the project. And so the whole scheme was to try to downsize the terminal to make it a more manageable project and to be able to contain the costs.
Yeah.
Right? So that was why there was a whole exercise of redesigning it to be able to try to achieve that.
Yes.
But there are other elements within the project which are supposed to be continuing, like, for example, the runway upgrade, which is a critical element of it, as well as the air navigational systems, which is very important because, look, just a couple of weeks ago, you'd realize planes couldn't land, right? Because we don't have what is known as an ILS approach. We don't have the technology in place, the equipment in place to be able to ensure that pilots can land in more difficult visibility settings.
Yes.
So it's part of the challenge that we have. And, of course, that means once you have those type of situations, there's a cost to the airline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the airline is not going to think, well, boy, you know. And they look at these things. They look at how at the risk. They do their own risk analysis, looking at these issues to decide, well, are we going to increase the number of flights here or not? You know, so a lot of these things have to be in place to be able to, to entice airlines, accordingly.
So I suppose that is all what they're looking at right now to further work on the thing too.
Right. So that work is a separate project being funded through the World Bank, and that is going to be continuing until the issues with respect to the terminal are sorted out.
Yes, I'm hoping everything comes out good.
Okay. All right, then, Colin. Thanks very much for that. Have a good one. And we're over time already. Sorry about that. And, of course, we'll be back again tomorrow, God willing, for another program of The Lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International.